This is Confessions of an Actress podcast, and I'm your host, Meredith Patterson. For the past two decades, I have worked as an actress in the entertainment industry on Broadway, in TV, and film. This podcast is my insight, observations, and in-depth interviews with my friends and colleagues about what life is really like in show business. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Confessions of an Actress. I'm your host, Meredith Patterson. How is everyone doing? I feel really good. I feel really light. I feel really happy. And like it's the beginning of a new era, because it is. Yay! And to begin this new era, I have one of my favorite people in the world, Erica von Kleist. She is a friend of mine and a brilliant, brilliant person. She is a multi-instrumentalist, a teacher, an entrepreneur. She's an author. She's done so many things, and we're going to talk about it all in this episode. She's also the first bachelor's degree in jazz in Juilliard's history. I mentioned that on the episode, but I just wanted to make sure to make point of that. She's incredible, and I want you guys to look at the show notes and get to know more about her. All of the information that you need in terms of tickets to the musicals that we talk about, her projects, her book, her albums, all of it is in the show notes, so be sure to get to know her. So without further ado, welcome my friend, the amazing Erica von Kleist.
Okay. The world needs more honesty. Good.
Exactly. It does. Okay, so I adore you. I actually got a little nervous when I was looking up information about you because I know you from, you know, Alpine Theater Project here in Whitefish where we both live. But like and then our conversations and stuff. But like I always get like it's funny when I start to like interview or talk to my friends in like a way that I'm like, I should probably like look up their information, their resume or whatever. And I'm like, holy crap, Erica, you're just amazing. Like, you've done so much and, you know, your bio and all of it. So, hi.
Hi. Well, I am honored to be here talking with you, also talented lady.
See? Thank you. You're my son's, although we haven't started Billy's piano lessons, but you're my son's piano teacher. But you're also, like, we just did a gig together at the Lodge. And, like, I've gotten to sing jazz with you and just, you know, you're amazing. And you're multi-talented, multi-instrumentalist, teacher, entrepreneur, all of that. And I love, for those of you guys listening, if you go to Erica's website, which is in the show notes, it literally says humor, jazz, education. And I love so much that you have such an eclectic side of you, but I want to launch into talking about so many things, but I want to start with your musical that I saw. The musical is canceled, the musical, because I think it's so brilliant. I mean, everything you do is brilliant, but like, just start with that process because it's just monumental, really.
It was quite a feat to write and release a musical during the pandemic. And it started with, so here in Whitefish, we're surrounded by incredibly talented, amazing people, which is why more amazing people like Meredith and Dustin and their families moved to Whitefish to, so we can all kind of be this pool of people to collaborate with. And yeah. There are these great actors and writers who live here named David Blair and Mikey Wynn, and they've been a part of cabaret projects and comedy projects and theater endeavors here for years, and we've always been saying, we got to write together, we got to do something together. So, you know, early in quarantine, we're all just sort of twiddling our fingers because we're all artists out of work.
Exactly.
And we just decided to get together over wine and just see what we could come up with. And we ended up laughing about some of the COVID memes that were coming out. I mean, COVID's not a laughing matter per se, but there is humor in this kind of tragedy in a way. The meme that we were laughing about was "The Earth is Healing." And it was all those memes that were like, The dolphins are returning to the canals of Venice. The earth is healing. And I don't know, just ridiculous things. And we ended up writing this song called "The Earth is Healing." And
oh, it's so brilliant.
And it just throws all of that under the bus. It's very just, I don't know what kind of humor to describe it as.
It's dark humor. It's my favorite kind of humor. This is how I fell in love with you, literally, when we met and you were doing the Cat Lady in New Year's Eve. Like, just the way that you approach things and the way your humor, and obviously, you know, your co-writers have the same kind of way of thinking, because that song is just so funny to me. And when I say dark humor, it's taking something that's really dark, like COVID, and then adding this, like, it's just such a hippie, fun, loving song.
It is.
Yeah, it's awesome. I didn't know it started with that song.
That was the first song. And then we were talking about how Mikey's coworker got the unemployment $600 a week and was getting so much more money than she had gotten in like ever.
Yeah, I know.
And
yeah.
How these people were like, I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to go on a leave. I'll start up working again in 6 months and just live off of this. And so then the song COVID Rich came to be. And that's a song where the character sings about all his unemployment that have come in. And he's getting takeout and ordering like dildos off the internet. And anyway, so there was that, and then the next one was Extroverts Tango, which is a song that one of our extroverted characters sings about it's just melodramatic. She's just like, but woe is me, I'm stuck in my house and I only have my wine and there's nobody here. Oh yeah, except my roommate. So it just snowballed into these characters, and then the characters snowballed into a storyline, and then we were at this tipping point in June where we'd written all these songs, and we were like, you know what? We could actually turn this into something. If we really go for it, we could get the cast together, we could get the orchestra together to do the orchestra, you know, to record the orchestration and everything. Yeah. And we were like, all right, team, it's either we do it or we don't. And we thought, well, we have nothing to lose. We'll just do it. So we ended up just going for it. And we got this incredible cast of these wonderful actors, most of whom, if not all of whom, have ties to Whitefish or live here, many of whom still live in New York and are doing Broadway shows. And
yeah,
orchestra members who are in current Broadway shows that are on hold, or great jazz musicians. And it just was this incredible summit of wonderful creative energy. And we ended up filming, having everyone film their part and their script, the script on Zoom. And we got little B-roll to put into these music videos of these ridiculous songs. And the orchestra recorded their parts. And then we spent 2.5 months just getting this thing edited together, which was a feat of mastery by our editor, Adam Pittman.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's massive to think about doing this and like reinventing the way you do a musical in a time when we're all stressed out and like, but adding, it's so, so phenomenal. And you can't watch it right now anymore because I guess it was just a limited time, but how could people like watch it?
It's still up.
It's still up. Okay, I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, it's up. You know, I should tell your listeners, I don't know when they're going to hear this podcast, when it's going to air, but we are going to be hopefully raising the ticket price. It's now $15, but we're going to be raising it to $20. And one of the reasons we're doing that is we're going to be using this show to benefit theater companies and, you know, artistic endeavors throughout the country that, like, are needing help right now, or philanthropic organizations that help the arts. We're going to be giving portions of our ticket sales to these organizations. So you may hear about an organization promoting our show that, you know, the ticket sales might benefit them. So just keep your ears out, because that's going to be coming down the pike, because we want to use this show for good. I mean, and the premise of the show is it's a theater company cast from a regional theater who gets on a Zoom call to find out the fate of their show during COVID. And
so it's perfect.
Like,
I mean,
it's perfect.
Yeah, it really is.
It's life imitating art, imitating life, imitating art, imitating life. And you just go down the rabbit hole of insanity. So you're going to love the show.
I have to tell you, when we watched it here in our home and we like just sat all and with my boys, 5 and 8, we're like all sitting around and watching it and just laughing and just going like, wow, this is like all these things that even though it's been a year, but even though it feels like it's been, you know, 20 years of being in quarantine and all this stuff, there's things that you touch on in the musical that are just like stuff that I've already forgotten about being an, you know, being an artist in this, in the industry, and then just a person in the world, that you do so brilliantly. And I know that you also have, you've always been somebody who's given back to education and given back to theater and given, like, you know, you have a nonprofit and a profit, a for-profit and nonprofit. You have a lot, there's a lot of things that you do that are so brilliant, but I love that you're giving back to theaters, because God knows we need it, right?
We do. And the thing is too, I mean, the long game for this show and many of the projects that I currently have and my colleagues have is we want to get back on stage, and these stages might not even be in existence in 6 months or a year.
I mean,
even if things start to open up, you can't really have a full season of theater for, you know, you have to plan years in advance for that. And everything is so on hold that we just don't know which end is up come the end of this year. So anything we can do to help these organizations just stay afloat right now so that we can get back on these stages is kind of like we're playing the long game with this.
I know. And it's actually, you know, I don't even think that we really know the ripple effect of all of what's going to happen to not just, you know, Broadway, but regional theaters. And I think that Broadway gets, you know, gets enough attention. I wouldn't say that they're getting a lot of attention, but getting enough attention. But the regional theaters, the smaller theaters, like, you know, concert halls, things like that, that you're right. I try not to think about that too much, but it's important to think about it and what we can do to help. And, you know, thank God you guys did this project. I have to say, really, it's awesome, and I'm hoping that it helps a bunch of theaters, as well as just, you know, creatively make people laugh again, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like this project was a saving grace for me in 2020 because, I mean, these days when I would go over to Mikey and Davey's house, we would just be laughing our faces off for 8 yeah. hours. And I would get to their place at like 1 in the afternoon, and I would look at the clock and I'd think it would be like 4, and it would actually be like 9 or 10 at night. And I'd been there for like 9 hours, and we were just having a ball. And to experience that level of creative collaboration with anyone is profound. I mean, you really don't experience that many times as an artist, let alone during a pandemic. And to have something so, you know, huge and magnetic come out of that is just a gift. I can't describe it as anything else. It was a gift to us with how it happened, and I'm hoping it's a gift to everyone who watches it, because you're going to laugh at the very least.
Yeah. Oh my God. Are you going to laugh? I mean, I said to you before, I want to see it again, because I was laughing so much throughout it and I couldn't pause it. You know, and I was just laughing throughout the entire thing. But, you know, it's funny to me when we were, because I mentioned we were singing together at the Lodge here in Whitefish, which was a really fun gig and unexpected, because one of our friends ended up getting COVID, so I got the gig. That sounds like a comedy song right there. Like, they got COVID, so I got the gig.
Right. Yeah.
Our friend Eric ended up getting, you know, coming down with being a little sick, and I got to do three shows with you. And I had talked about how much I wanted to sing jazz with you, and like, now looking at all your jazz history, which I knew before, but like, I was so just like, oh my God, you're so amazing. Aww. And we had such a blast, but we were, you know, in our breaks, we were talking about just so many things and so many life things. And I didn't know that you, when you were in the pit, you mentioned this, you were in the pit as a musician on Broadway, that you didn't have a lot of humor in your life, or you weren't as funny. And I'm like, how is that possible? I don't know you any other way. You are one of the funniest people. I mean, honestly, just in doing research to talk to you, I'm like, I can't take it. You're so, so awesome. So, I mean, take me back to, like, you know, New York and in the pit and that life to now.
Yeah. It was a very different life. I feel like I've lived two very different lives so far, and I'm just getting started on the second one. But yeah, I got to New York when I was 18 and went to the Juilliard School. The Juilliard School. There we go.
And you got the first bachelor's degree in jazz in Juilliard history. I must say that, because that's incredible and amazing to even just go to that school. But like, you know, the renowned Juilliard School.
The renowned Juilliard School, yes, yes. And that's an entire podcast unto itself. Very fortunate to have had that experience, and diplomacy, diplomacy, diplomacy. Anyway, so I started my career as a working touring jazz musician, saxophonist, and I played with tons of big bands as a side person. And I also had, I also recorded my own albums, but everything I was doing was pretty much all instrumental jazz. I mean, except for those moments where I would, you know, play with a singer. I did an album with the Diva Jazz Orchestra and Ann Hampton Calloway back in the day. And that was really fun. She's super funny. And I was like, wow, this levity is bringing such joy to the audience. And it's not that instrumental jazz doesn't do that, because the great acts do. But there's so much intellectualism that has come into the jazz world that there's not a whole lot of storytelling. Okay. I should say it's more about performing on your instrument, which is also very cool. I don't know, but I started. There was something about playing in that scene that was really fulfilling, but also I wasn't completely fulfilled.
Yeah.
And being a side person, I'm a leader. I like to spearhead my own projects and do my own thing. And
you're good at
it. The bulk of my work there was as a side man. And then I got to do a Broadway show, which was awesome. I did Adam's Family on Broadway. And that was really fun. That pit was super fun. And I just remember thinking, like, I'm in the pit. I'm super thankful for this gig. It's awesome. The music is great. The orchestra's awesome. But there was something was like, yeah, I could go from this show to another show and be making decent money as a musician in New York, but this is not my life. This is not meant to be what I'm supposed to do on this planet. And I just knew that. I didn't know what it was I was supposed to do. So I got to Montana. That's a whole other story.
That's a whole other podcast.
And it's a whole other podcast. And I'm trying to make this to get to the point of my story. I ended up applying for a job here locally to be an executive director of an arts organization here in the Flathead Valley, a great arts organization. And I wasn't given the chance at an interview for the job, and I know it's because I'm a woman. And
that's what started Boobs. Boobs.
That started Boobs.
Which I
that's
love.
That's what's... I know,
and like, what? A boobs
it's funny.
Musical.
I know. I reference Boobs, and like, I don't give the backstory. And the people who never know that don't know that I have a show called Boobs. They're like, "What is she talking about?
What are you talking about?" But because I know that story. And sorry to interject, but I know that story about you not getting an interview. And I'm like, "Oh my god!" But what a hilarious and amazing another musical that you did. Boobs that came out of that experience. But you didn't get that interview, which I can't believe, by the way, their loss.
Well, and I mean, in terms of a business setting, I do have credentials that would have at least warranted an interview, or at least a conversation, or at least, you know, if you're going to practice unfair hiring practices, at least make it look like you give a shit, you know? Like smoke and mirrors, people. Yeah. You got to be smart here. And
play the game.
So I ended up getting really mad, and I thought, okay, either I'm going to burn a bridge on Facebook, which is super immature and horrible, or I'm going to write a song. So I was like, I'll write a song first. And I remember I got out my pen and paper. I'd never written lyrics before, but this song, whatever I was going to write, needed lyrics. And I've always written instrumental music because I'm a jazz musician. But lyrics. And I started writing a song about mansplaining.
Oh my god.
And it's called You're the Man. And I actually, there's a music video on my YouTube channel you can check out. I ended up singing it and playing on piano for a bunch of my friends, and really nervous because I'd never sung and played on piano before. And my friends were like, Erica, you're funny. And I was like, what? Like, they're like, you're funny. You're actually funny. I'm like, no.
This is what's amazing to me. This is why you are completely brilliant, and the more I learn about you, the more brilliant you become. Because the fact that you had never—I know you told me this before—but you had not really like played the piano, because you are a multi-instrumentalist, but not a pianist. Not like you didn't go to Juilliard for piano, but you can just sit down and actually like you can sit down and write lyrics when you've never written lyrics before, and just write this amazingly funny song, like right out of the gate. It's
so mind-boggling, but that is truly, you know, a tipping your hat to your brilliant instincts.
Well, I think it's, I've always learned that you have to be adaptable in the music world, just job-wise.
Yeah.
I mean, part of the reason I play so many woodwind instruments is so that I could do a Broadway gig. I mean, on Addams Family, I played 5 instruments on that show, and that's not a lot for a Broadway gig. I think on Book of Mormon, the Read One book is 11 instruments.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and it just being adaptable. Like, when I moved to Montana, there weren't really many pianists here who could just read through a chord chart. Like you and I at the lodge last week or the week before, yeah. You know, you gave me a couple chord charts. Okay, just, you know, here's the lead sheet. Just to be able to do that, there's not a whole lot of pianists here in the area who could do that. And I knew how many great singers there were here. So when I got here, I just started getting my piano chops together, and all of a sudden I was working.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's necessity is the mother of invention here, and especially in the music world. So,
you're
yeah,
so that smart that way. It really is amazing. Like, and yeah, so Boobs the Musical started with mansplaining.
And so I played it for my friends, and they're like, you're funny. And I was like, wow, okay. So that fed my ego a little bit. So I thought, well, I'm going to write some other songs. And I don't remember the next few songs I wrote, but similar to your musical is canceled. I started writing these songs, and then these songs started snowballing into a storyline, and then characters, and then a concept. And all of a sudden, I had a script, and I'd written all of these songs based on the storyline for this musical that I wrote called Boobs the Musical. And I did a reading at my house with like 7 actors here. At my little piano, I played and sang all the songs. They acted the parts, and then 3 months later, I brought the show up to New York, and I did a reading in an off Broadway theater, and with a very good cast. I mean, just Broadway cast of a lot of people who have had Whitefish connections.
Yeah,
and so I was there. Doing the show, and a couple of producer friends came, and they were like, Erica, this is really good. One of my friends said, however, you need to do this as a one-woman comedy act. And I was like, you're crazy. And I'm like, I am the band kid. I'm in the pit. I'm like the music director, you know, I'm like off to the side. And they're like, no, you need to do this like for real.
Yeah.
So 3 months later, I ended up doing a one-woman show at my house, because I do house concerts at my house. And doing this for my friends, and people actually paid a ticket price because, you know, I want to make money off of my friends.
Of course.
And I did this one-woman show, and people were freaking losing their shit. They loved it.
It's so funny. It is so – this is where I can't believe that this is like your first – you know, that there's writers, like people who write musicals all the time who are like, they're writing a musical. They write – you know, you usually like write a few before you get like your golden goose or like your – like a really great, funny musical. And this right out of the gate is just so brilliant. And I've watched – I mean, I went through – there's one number that you do, which is just – it's like a Gilbert and Sullivan patter. It's so fast where you're talking about apologizing. And I just – I'm howling. I'm like, I want to be – like, I just want to be sitting next to you at the piano while you write all these songs, because you're just – it's brilliant. You're really brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
I'm feeding your ego now. See, this is
– You are. I'm just – I am so loving this. Yeah. So, I mean, where it is now is, you know, I still have the musical available, you know, I'm actually going to end up changing the name of the musical because I found out that there was another musical that came out in the early 2000s called Boobs the Musical. It is there. And I actually got a very, very nicely worded, very kind letter from their lawyer.
Oh,
who
okay.
were like, hey, we're all artists in this together. And they were super nice. It wasn't a cease and desist by any means. But they were like, yeah, we have a show called Boobs the Musical. We did it. We're actually reviving it again. This was pre-COVID.
And you're like,
so anyway.
You're like, bullshit. I'm just kidding. No, it's
I know.
No,
I'm like, fight me, bitches. See you in court. No, I have another name for the show, which I will not divulge. But
To be continued. But you were supposed to, you know, it's funny, in 2020, a lot of things, a lot of people had a lot of plans, a lot of artists, I like, were like, oh, I was supposed to go do this, I was supposed to go do that. And I know that, like, there was something about boobs going to New York or going to maybe to Feinstein's or 54 Below or whatever it was. Were you supposed to do some? Were you supposed to bring it to New York again?
Yeah. So at the end of 2019, I decided to do a little sabbatical and move back to the city for 2 months. So I did that and I booked a bunch of shows. So at this point, I'm doing the boobs as a one woman show called Eric Von Kleist or Boobs with Eric Von Kleist. And I booked 4 shows in New York over those course of 2 months, and every single one of them got canceled. This is pre-COVID. There's no excuse. This is just tail between my legs, like, you know, no pandemic. I was just under the threshold of ticket sales for a couple of them. And then there was another one where it was supposed to be at a venue that had a piano, and then they just realized, oh, wait, we don't actually have a piano. So it just was one of these.
It's amazing why things get canceled or how things get canceled. But then you would have never done your musicals canceled the musical if all those other things didn't get canceled that had nothing to do with COVID. This is welcome to the business, right?
Right. Exactly.
Oh my God.
Exactly. So, but I ended up coming back to Montana the day after I left New York and did two sold out shows in Montana, one in Whitefish, one in Missoula. And so that was like, okay, I'm onto something here.
Yeah.
And you know, so I was pretty discouraged, but I didn't let that get me down.
You don't. No, that's right. That's what you have to. That's what you have to do in this business. I mean, honestly, like, just have an idea and follow through with it. Because you know, there's so many people who have ideas that don't follow through, and you're not one of those people. You definitely follow through.
Yeah, and sometimes I follow through on things I shouldn't follow through on. I always bite off way more than I can chew. I always have all these ideas all the time, and I think all of them are the best idea ever, and I want to follow through on all of them. And I get into situations where I'm like in way over my head, and then nothing's successful because I have way too much shit going on. So
you and I are this is why we're sisters.
Yes,
this is
I know.
Why I connect with you, because I see myself in you, and I'm like, I never.
Our ambition gets the best of us.
Yes, it's so true, and it's frustrating because I'm like, why don't I have like 24 more hours in the day? Because I don't have everything done yet, and I have all these projects swirling around my head, and they're not getting done. And I know that that's been kind of a common thread of like COVID time or quarantine time, is that people are getting a lot of things done that they didn't get to do. But there were moments, and I don't know how you feel about this, but there were moments when I was like, I don't want to fucking do anything. Like, I just want to, mm-hmm. I want to stop, like, pushing for this to happen or Zooming or whatever. Like, I just want to stop for a second.
No doubt. I mean, early in quarantine, well, before quarantine, I was promoting 3 huge projects. It was Boobs, you know, my one woman show. I also wrote a book that I self-published, and it's a music education book. And I also had an album coming out with the tap dancer Dwight Fleming Jr. So these 3 projects, I was like, all right, I'm gonna focus on 3 projects all of 2020. And the beginning of 2020, I had 20 flights between like January 1st and like March 20th when everything got grounded.
Yeah.
And I was in shock when everything got canceled. Everything I had invested in totally got canceled. But at the same time, I felt this amazing sense of relief because I could literally just be on my patio in the sun playing ukulele, smoking a bowl, and not checking my email because nobody was emailing me about anything. There's literally nothing to do.
Yeah.
Like, you
and
can't book any shows.
Everybody's in the same boat. Yeah.
Everyone's in the same boat. So I'm literally just sitting there, and I don't think in my adult life I had actually experienced that. I mean, you have these days off, you know, and I'm doing air quotations right now with like days off, because we know what that is. A day off is like, okay, I got to do this. You got to get your kids your new clothes, and you got to do this. I got to clean the clothes. I got to do the dishwasher, whatever. This is literally nothing to do. And it was a whole new feeling, and it was wild. And it was actually, I didn't want anyone to reach out to me. I was like, at this point, this is fine for me, write me right now.
Yeah. especially fine. For an artist, because we don't really, we understand it because we've been in it for so long, but it's a different world where you don't really have days off unless you're like, you know, you're doing a gig for like a year, but even then you kind of have this feeling of like, is it doing well? Is it going to cancel? Like, is this show going to close or whatever? And this is not COVID time. This is normal time. And then you're constantly like on your days off, you're auditioning or you're networking or you're doing other things. And so to have the time where your industry has shut down, I've never experienced, there's so many industries that have never shut down, but I've never experienced the pause, the massive pause like that. And I'm kind of with you, like the feeling of relief of being like, I don't have anything to do and it's not my fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, know? It isn't. For once, it's not my fault.
For once, it's not because I suck. Or I didn't.
For once, I actually can blame it on something else. And that was like the best part of it.
That's your new song. For once, I can blame it on something else. Besides the fact that I suck. You know, because like as artists, we were always like, oh, that audition. Like I just auditioned for something recently, actually. I put myself on tape and I was like, I sent it off to LA and it was Friday and I didn't hear anything. So I probably didn't get it. So I should just let it go. And it's that kind of like constant, you know, mind fuck that you do with yourself. And, you know, but with COVID, it's like, oh, it's all gone. And we're just sitting and smoking a bowl. And it does. It's for the ambitious people. I don't know about you, but there was a moment of pause, but then I was like, kind of like, I need to do something. Like I have to get back, you know? But
well, and I mean, even just feeling like you have an outlet for your music, you just, and that's where Musicals Canceled came in for me. Cause I was over at Mikey and Davey's house, just like hemorrhaging comedy and music. And it was such a release
and creativity and connection and all those things that like, that's something that we're not used to not having, like, and that we have to kind of douse, like we can't, you know, be all in a room and like, and with our industry more than anything, it's about connection. It's about you're live performing in front of people. And so you're live on stage with people, with musicians, with singers and all of it. It's just, we've had to find a different way, but you know, it's amazing to me, all the things that you've been able to do during COVID, before COVID, what's going to happen after COVID? Why is mm-hmm. COVID is everything. COVID is the marker. Now that we're going into like, you know, a new era of life, hopefully with, you know, a new president and all that stuff. I feel like the sun is shining a little bit brighter, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know that things are opening up a little bit, not maybe business-wise, but in other ways.
Yeah. And I think what we've realized, it's not all about the jobs. It's not all about the gigs.
Yeah.
And like, you know, for you and your family, I know this was like the first Christmas you guys got to spend together.
Yeah.
And as much as I know that Dustin missed being on the road with the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, there's also this other side of it where it's like, oh my God, this is priceless.
Yeah. And it's time that we would have never had, or, you know, unless he was fired or something, which would be terrible, which again was like when you get time as a family, sometimes as an artist family, it's usually because somebody lost a gig. So being that it wasn't, you know, it was collectively everybody losing a gig and it wasn't happening, you know, thinking of the good side of it. Yes, we got the holidays together and, you know, I mean, how has your family been? How is your holiday? I mean, I know we talked about this, but like the connection of being able to see your family and like, how has that been with everything going on?
Well, I mean, my family is my adopted. I mean, I should say I have really great family members. Like I have my aunts and my uncles who I'm in touch with. My immediate family in terms of the people who I've chosen to be with here in Montana. Like these are my family. And this is who I got to spend the holidays with. Yeah. And I mean, of course, I'm in touch with my family members, of course, but, you know, it's not like we were all trying to fly around and see each other, and it's not been the tightest of families, even though everyone's, you know, really cool and awesome. Everyone's kind of doing their own thing in a way, so I don't feel like that's much different, but what's here in Montana is my chosen family, and these are people that are going to be in my life my whole life, I believe.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I know that we got to spend New Year's together, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And being able to be, you know, among people who you choose as family, you know, it's interesting. This time, I was just talking to my other friend about this. This time of our lives and having everything shut down and having all this bad around us has made us kind of focus on what do we want in life? Like, what do we want to do? What is important to us? Who is our family? Who is our connection? Who are our friends? And I think more so than ever, that's what I've been feeling. I've been really tuning in on who I'm spending time with and my energy with at this time. Even if it's, you know, just talking on the phone or just Zooming or just, you know, any of it. I really have just kind of trimmed the fat. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I don't know. And also the fact that we're all connecting virtually makes you think of a lot of people who you haven't connected with in a while. And at least I've reconnected with friends I haven't connected with in a while.
Yeah.
Just via Zoom, because now that's how people are communicating. You don't have to be there in real life to feel like you have a connection with someone, even though it is different. So that's been good, reconnecting with people I haven't seen in a while.
Yeah. And something that I know that you've been doing, or maybe you just started doing it, but with your book, which is brilliant, I know that you've been doing a lot of teaching. Have you been teaching on Zoom, teaching your cool approach to jazz theory book? I know that because I know education is really big for you. It is for me as well. And that's one of the reasons why I love being in Whitefish, being able to give back to the youth. But in terms of your book, I know you just did a Zoom, I think, for a school, or you're doing that?
Yeah, so...
I'm like such a great interviewer. I swear, I'm like, what am I asking you?
I have my irons in many fires, so...
yes.
No, so last week was the Jazz Education Network Conference, which is a huge... conference that happens for all the jazz educators, for colleges, different bands, performing artists, teaching artists. And actually, last year I had the privilege of doing this conference, or going to it, in New Orleans.
Oh,
and
nice.
It was around this time last year. I was in New Orleans. It was amazing. And so this year it was virtual. And I was a panelist for a couple of things. I did a webinar about flute doubling, so flute playing for saxophonists. And then I did a webinar about teaching chords and harmony to beginning improvisers. And it's a curriculum that I have called A Cool Approach to Jazz Theory. And it's for people who are just beginning to understand what chords are and see chord symbols on music and want to know what they mean and how to improvise with them or how to understand what the notes are and the sort of the philosophy behind them. So it's a book that outlines that, and it there's a fun little illustrated character named Ollie the Jazz Cat that walks the people through the book. And honestly, it's one of the most fun, palatable music theory books you're gonna find.
Yeah, it's awesome. I've actually had the boys looking through at the cat and like wondering what the cat's doing and all that stuff. But I mean, it's awesome. I know nothing of this world because I told you when we were performing together, I was like, I barely read music, but we're going to change that because I'm going to learn how to read music from you. And, you know, and you're also, you know, just giving back in such a great way, doing these webinars and having written this book, but this is the revised version of the book, right?
Yeah.
What's different about it?
Well, I put it out in 2011 and I was like so excited about it. And you know, it was a good first draft, but then I was going through it and I found a couple little errors, and there were just certain things about it that were not tightened up. And also it was like almost 200 pages.
Oh.
So this, and I'm like, this is for middle school kids. And like middle school kids will be like, oh my God, this is way too much. So I shortened it to like 66 pages, and now it's like, it feels like more like a coloring. It reads like a coloring book when you hold it up. You know, it feels like a coloring book.
Yeah.
Rather than like, oh my God, this is a giant thing I have to learn how to do. So that's like making it more palatable for kids.
Yeah.
And I find attention spans are getting shorter and shorter, or that might just be me. I don't know. But
no, it's definitely attention spans are getting shorter. But
so,
it actually, I mean, again, I think that it's, I think it's just brilliant that you did it, because it's passing on such great information and ways to, a better way to teach. I actually saw the commercial that you put online about jazz theory, which I think you made with a couple of the kids. I saw a couple of the kids here from Whitefish that were in it, mm-hmm. about how it is a better way to teach jazz theory, which I think is just awesome. I love that so much.
Yeah, it just makes it easy so that every kid feels like, oh, I get this. This is not too hard, and they can blow a solo after a little while.
Yeah, exactly. And me, as the daughter of a jazz musician who, you know, my dad's a drummer and barely reads music himself, as he would say, you know, it's a world that I'm always trying to better myself. I'm always trying to figure stuff out. And that's just one thing in terms of being a performer that I've never really mastered, which is reading music. And there's a lot of artists. I know there's a lot of singers who don't read music, so I'm not alone in that. But, you know, I think that learning music, and then maybe jazz improvising, what we were talking about, like when I was scatting with you, when we were scatting is a form of singing, everybody, in case you're thinking something else. when I was, see what happens when I talk to you, I start thinking like dark humor. But when I was scatting with you at the lodge, and I just kind of improvise, and I have no clue what I'm doing or where I'm going musically, just at what's in my instincts. So I'm looking forward to working on that and getting better at that.
Yeah. And that this book can definitely help. I mean, in terms of reading music, it's not a music reading coaching book, but it's simple enough that, because you have such a good ear, anyone with a good ear, any singer out there who wants to understand chord theory better, especially if you're going into like auditions and you've got lead sheets and understanding what things mean, like it's this real step-by-step approach.
Yeah. I just think it's so awesome that you're, you know, so involved in educating kids, and also just so amazing at putting together projects. And you know, you mentioned DeWitt Fleming Jr., who is an incredible tap dancer who you and I know, and I got a chance to tap with him, and he like left me in the dust. I was like, you're amazing. But you guys did sax and taps together, and your solo or your single you guys put out, which was live at Dizzy Gillespie's club. What is the single again?
Well, we have a couple of singles that our main one that we've been promoting is Piggy Bank for Charity.
That's it.
And
I love it.
Yeah. And we put out the live recording / video from Dizzy's, but then we also have a music video where we went around Whitefish and tapped, and we like lip sync tapped to one of our, we did a demo recording of it. And
it's so awesome. I love
it. We're all around town.
it's so goofy. Great.
It's goofy.
But yeah, I think you just, you know, you're doing so many wonderful things, and I want 2021 and 2022 to just like, you know, all of these projects to be back on the boards for you and for all of us, really, right?
Yeah, for all of us. I mean, it's very frustrating right now, but I think it's a good reprieve for us to really get our ducks in a row. And I'm gearing up for it. I'm ready. I'm ready for it. I'm ready to get back on an airplane, get out there, start teaching and playing again. I can't wait.
Yeah, me too. Me too, my friend. Well, thank you so much for this. This was awesome.
Thank you.
And we didn't even say motherfucker, so... Oh, I just did. I said it.
We'll save that for the next one. We'll have a couple bottles of wine in us for the next
one.
Yes,
we were saying I definitely love to swear, and you do too. So we needed to add some swear words to this episode, because that's what all the intelligent people do. It's what I've been told.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah, absolutely. We are so, so smart, apparently.
We're so smart.
Yes. This was great, Meredith. I really appreciate it.
Oh my
Always
God,
fun
of course.
Talking to you.
I adore you.
To support this podcast, make a donation, or become a sponsor, visit confessionsofanactress.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram for our live Talkin' Tuesday series with former podcast guests. And check in every Wednesday for our bonus episodes, Wellness Wednesdays. And if you're feeling super generous, head over to Apple Podcasts on iTunes and give us a 5-star review. I really appreciate it. And remember, have vision for what you want, but be grateful for where you are every single day.